And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dodson.
The 2024 Indiana Legislative Session closed on Friday, May 8th, with the General Assembly passing more than 175 bills. Priorities for the session included addressing public education, child care, and Medicaid, just to name a few. Joining us now is Suzanne Crouch, Indiana's Lieutenant Governor, with a legislative update, as well as to share what the investment and resources the state is committed to for our Hoosier youth. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, as always, thank you for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Well, Dee, it's always good to be with you in Northwest Indiana, even if it's virtually.
Absolutely. So, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I want to start our conversation today by discussing a topic that is not largely in the forefront of headlines, and that is foster youth. Now, late last year, I read an article published by ProPublica that made, for me, a lasting impression, and it was a sort of a call to action. The title of the article was, "Here's What Can Happen When Kids Age Out of the Foster Care System." And in the article, they had stats that reflected that, for me, that were truly heartbreaking, that nationally, roughly 30% of foster youth end up homeless after aging out of the foster care system. And it's largely because they don't have a support system. Now, earlier this year, the IHCDA announced 4 new affordable housing developments across the state, including right here in Maryville, that will provide housing for young Hoosiers. Can you take a moment to tell us about this initiative?
Thank you, Dee. I think it's an important initiative. You know, foster care children go through incredible trauma through their lives. And at the age of 18, after having been in the foster care system, they age out and they are kind of turned loose and expected to live on their own. And I don't know about you, Dee, but at the age of 18, if I'd been turned out and said, okay, you're on your own, you get no more support from home or anyone else, I'd like to think I'd have succeeded, but I don't know. You know, that is a difficult thing to do. And so aging out of the foster care system at the age of 18 with no support, having gone through all the trauma, as you indicated, many of these children end up homeless because they have nowhere to go. They have no support system. And so being touched by this situation, I was able to, in the 23 budget session, get $5 million for foster care housing for those children that are aging out of the foster care system, where we can provide housing for them to go to with wraparound services to help them further their education or get a job. And then my housing agency put in another $5 million. And so we were able to invest $10 million into this foster care housing for these children. And of course, it's an incredible step forward, but it's not nearly enough. And those, as you mentioned, we were able to do 4 foster care housing developments throughout Indiana, one in Goshen, one in Indianapolis, one in Jeffersonville. And then, of course, they're Building and Impacting Communities, Inc., Epiphany and Company. They're a 20-unit development in Maryville. And so these housing developments will hopefully give those children a start on life and enable them to, you know, to get the skills that they need to become productive, happy, healthy citizens here in Indiana. You know, we can invest early on or we can pay later. And we have chosen to invest early on as they age out of the foster care system to be able to give them a chance on life.
Well, I think that was quite powerful, what you just stated, that we can invest early on or we can pay later. And I also think the added benefit, you oftentimes hear about housing opportunities that are available. There's always a wait list, but the added benefit of the wraparound services, I know, will benefit all of our foster youth in the region. And so thank you for being such a staunch advocate, ensuring that, as you shared, $10 million total is poured into this initiative.
And, you know, children don't ask to be brought into this world. Adults bring them into this world. And for those children who find themselves in situations where, you know, they either have parents that are not able or have the skills to care for them, you know, and therefore they're taken from the homes, we need to give those children a chance to be successful in life. It's our responsibility.
So, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, the 2023-2024 school year has come to a close, and families right now are just chomping at the bit to get out to explore. And I always like to speak to you specifically about tourism as an economic driver, particularly here in the region, as we are along Lake Michigan, so we have miles upon miles of beaches, trails, lots of entertainment options here in the region, casinos, restaurants, and of course, many festivals, including one that I think has become your favorite, and that's Pierogi Fest that happens up here in Whiting.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you oversee the IDDC, and your office released a new economic impact study that reflected tourism across the state has returned to pre-pandemic levels. So how much of a financial impact does tourism really have on the Hoosier State?
Well, you know, that you bring up a good point, Dee. And people, when they think about tourism, they don't think about economic development. But tourism is economic development, because 68 cents of every dollar a tourist spends in a community stays in that community, and that helps that community grow. It helps their revenues grow. You know, it helps their economy grow. And so in Indiana, we have tourism as the major economic development impact, and it contributes $6 billion in economic contributions to the state. It supports over 200,000 jobs in the tourism industry. And of course, as you just mentioned, you know, school's out, kids are ready to go, you know, visit their local and state tourism attractions. Parents are ready to take them there, and that helps to spur the economy. And it really is also about the quality of life. And of course, we just experienced the single largest one-day sporting event in the nation, in the world, with the Indy 500, you know, bringing 300,000 people from around the world to Indianapolis. And my, what an opportunity our community and to showcase our state. And, you know, we have so many more events coming up. I know the South Shore Convention Visitors Bureau there up there in your region is doing a tremendous job in terms of promoting Northwest Indiana. And I suspect you've got quite a few little events coming up like the Pierogi Fest that I'm going to want to get up and experience.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to also mention, when you mentioned the Indy 500, I have to mention the effect of Caitlin Clark and what she is doing, bringing so many fans, not only eyes to the WNBA, but bringing so many fans to, I believe, most of the games are sold out right now, which is kind of unheard of for women's sports. And so Caitlin Clark is making a significant economic impact on the Hoosier State as well.
Great point. Great point. And I just read where she scored her all-time high of 30 points. And, you know, that brings economic development, tourism dollars into the community. But it also helps to instill pride in our state. And by golly, it's about time women are recognized for what they do, right? And Caitlin Clark is putting a spotlight on women's sports and on female athletes. And I applaud her for that. I think it's wonderful.
Now, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I want to pivot our conversation to talk about something that we have in the past spoke about in great detail. So data shows that 1 in 5 Hoosiers struggle with mental health challenges, yet many do not feel safe to seek help. On June 12th, you are co-chairing the Mental Health Roundtable Summit in Indy, an event dubbed as a gathering of diverse voices from various sectors, convening not only public officials, but youth advocates and leaders from business, education, healthcare, and faith communities. Talk about the importance of this collaborative event.
Well, you know, as we learned during COVID, we all went through a mental health crisis, right, Dee? I mean, it might have been fear or isolation or depression or anxiety, but we all experienced that. And as a result, you know, there's more awareness that, you know, you don't have to necessarily be okay all the time. And so there is that sense of urgency to do something, to be able to help those Hoosiers that struggle with mental illness and addiction. And I've mentioned many times that, you know, for me, it's very personal. My mother, my brother, my sister, and our daughter have all struggled with mental illness and addiction. So for me, it's personal. And I've seen how Hoosiers have struggled, how my own family has struggled. And I know my family's not alone, Dee. I know there are other families out there that have gone through the same thing. So to have the Mental Health Summit, which is on June 12th, bringing together people, focusing on the mental health challenges facing young Hoosiers. And we believe that that is critically important because we know that our young people, we've seen a 60% increase in anxiety and depression among our young people. We have got a generation now of young Hoosiers who are very anxious and afraid because of what they went through with COVID. And in fact, this is the most alarming statistic I can share, that suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people. So this summit is really focusing on those young people, bringing together community leaders from around the state. It is our second summit. We had one last May, and this one is on Wednesday, June 12th. It's at the Hyatt Regency in Indianapolis. It's open until we fill up, and the registration is only $25. And, you get to hear from incredible featured speakers like Dr. Jerome Adams and Dr. Antonio Novello, who are former U.S. Surgeon General. So you get to hear from former Congressman Patrick Kennedy, who is in recovery and struggles with bipolar disorder. You're going to hear from the Chief Medical Officer for the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute. And then we are going to have a panel of young Hoosiers who are part of the IU School of Medicine Youth Coalition, who will themselves be talking about what young people are going through and experiencing today. And I suspect that we'll be talking about cell phones and social media and the impact that is having on our young people and on their mental health. So I would encourage any of your listeners that are interested to go to mentalhealthroundtable.org and learn more and perhaps even sign up to come to Indianapolis. And for that $25, you get breakfast and lunch and great snacks. And then, of course, the opportunity to hear from some incredible speakers.
Finally, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, you'll be recognized this Saturday at the Edgewater Health 50th Annual Gala, Caring in the Key of Life, and you'll be honored with the Leadership Award. I recently had the opportunity to speak with executives at that healthcare system, and they just spoke so highly of your advocacy work to move the needle in terms of mental health awareness and how generous you are with sharing your story, as you just did just now, the story of your family and their challenges with mental health. So earlier, we mentioned that many Hoosiers don't feel safe to seek help, let alone share their story. And I want to just ask you this. Is that why you are just so vocal about sharing the struggles that you and your family have endured?
Yeah, I didn't start sharing my story until COVID. And it wasn't that I was ashamed or embarrassed about my family and their struggles. It's painful. But during COVID, when I saw how everyone was struggling, and I thought, maybe if I share my story, that gives other people permission to share their stories. And that's how we remove the stigma and we allow people to know that it's okay not to be okay all the time. We don't pick our genes, Dee. If we did, I'd certainly be different than I am today. But we get the genes we inherit. And unfortunately, those genes can include a predisposition to mental illness or addiction. And so it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's a struggle that people go through. And so we have to get help to you. But what I would tell your listeners is that if you're worried about who you should talk to, call 988, which is our crisis response hotline. And you might not even be in crisis. You may just have a question about what to do or who to talk to. Call 988. You'll be connected with a professional who will get you answers. And if you're in crisis, we will send people to you to be able to help you. That is the message I would leave with your listeners today, is to spread the word about the 988 hotline, because we know that when we have an emergency, we call 911. But when we have a behavioral health crisis, or we have even a question, call 988 and be connected to someone that can get your questions answered and can get help to you today.
I think that's a great way to end our conversation for today. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I always enjoy having you join us here on Lakeshore Public Media because, of course, you share so much information about what's happening at the State House, all of the policy that is being pushed through the State House. But you also take the opportunity to share everything from all of the four agencies that are under your leadership. And so, again, we thank you so much for joining us here on Lakeshore Public Media. We look forward to seeing you on Saturday here at the Edgewater Health Gala. And we look forward again to having you back with us next month.
I'm looking forward to it too, Dee. Have a great day.
Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch is the co-chair of the Indiana Mental Health Roundtable Summit in collaboration with Riley Children's Health that will be held Wednesday, June 12th, 2024 at the Hyatt Regency, Indianapolis.
For more information, visit www.mentalhealthroundtable.org.
And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. In recent years, the conversation around youth mental health has gained significant momentum, yet the challenges facing young people remains complex and deeply rooted. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, nearly 1 in 5 adolescents in the United States has a diagnosable mental health disorder. Despite this alarming statistic, many youth continue to struggle in silence, often lacking the necessary support systems to navigate their mental health journeys. A growing body of evidence demonstrates the critical role that youth-serving professionals, such as educators, counselors, social workers, and mentors, play in fostering a supportive environment conducive to mental wellness. Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman joins us now to share that by fostering positive relationships, undergoing comprehensive training, and engaging in interdisciplinary collaboration, youth-serving professionals can significantly impact the mental health outcomes of youth. Tammy, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you. It's always nice to be with you.
So, Tammy, in 2021, the Indiana Department of Health conducted and published a survey that sadly reported Indiana's youth suicide rate at that time was top 20 in the nation. It goes on to share that our youth experienced a, quote, epidemic of loneliness, end quote. The report summarizes that there was not one key issue that could be pointed to explain the overall survey results. Now, I have spent the last few weeks speaking to mental health advocates in observance of Mental Health Awareness Month, and they all echo the sentiments shared in your latest column that ending the stigma around mental health, and in particular for our conversation today, youth mental health, has garnered momentum. Now, Tammy, you open your latest column, Nurturing the Minds, the Crucial Role of Youth-Serving Professionals in Youth Mental Health, with some interesting data from the National Institute of Mental Health. Spend a few moments sharing how in your column you share that in recent years, that while the conversation around youth mental health has gained significant momentum, the challenges facing young people remains complex and deeply rooted.
Certainly, yes. According, as you said, to the National Institute for Mental Health, nearly 1 in 5 adolescents in the United States has a diagnosable mental health disorder. And so that's a significant number. That is something that, you know, we've talked about, I think, in the past, should be normalized. That's an ailment, a health concern, just like any other health concern. And yet we know that despite that significant number, many kids still do struggle in silence, or they lack the necessary support or access to the care that they need.
Tammy, what are the contributing factors or influences for youth mental health? You point to several in your latest column.
Yes, you know, it can be any of those things. There can be the social dynamics, environmental stressors. There can be some genetic predispositions. And it's often a combination of several of those. And it's unique to each and every young person. So again, that's why it's important that we put the supports in place and the access to care that can be tailored to each young person's unique condition.
What role do youth-serving organizations and or leaders play in supporting youth mental well-being?
Well, from our lens, they play a big role because often youth-serving professionals, you know, whether that's a coach or a youth group leader or an after-school provider or a counselor, any of those folks, many times they are the first point of contact for a young person that may be experiencing some sort of angst or distress. And because they interact often very routinely with a young person, they're in the position that allows them to identify some of those early signs. They're in a position to say, gosh, I'm seeing a change in behavior in this young person. And they can be the ones that really provide that initial support and then hopefully connect the teen or the young person with the specialized care that they need.
You mentioned that they are oftentimes the first ones that kind of see that cry for help or that need for help. Are our youth serving professionals properly trained to support our youth?
That is a terrific question, Dee. And you know, I would say it varies greatly. Many of them would probably say no, that they would like more training. We hear that with some regularity. Youth workers are saying they would love to have more training so that they do know that this is an issue. They see it day in, day out with their kids. And yet they need some more of those tangible trainings that aren't just theoretical, but that can really help them, like we said, respond in a supportive, mindful manner with kids so that they can get them the help they need. So I think most would say no. Many of them do have some sort of training, but many report feeling very ill-prepared.
Finally, Tammy, before I let you go, I just wanted to share that I had the opportunity to speak to Indiana's Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch earlier today. And one of the topics of discussion, and it's a topic that we have circled back to several times over the last couple of years, and it's the conversation around mental wellness for all Hoosiers. And the topic continues to come to the forefront because she has made it a key priority in her role as the president of the Indiana Senate. And as you note in your latest column, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch is the chair of the Indiana Mental Health Roundtable Summit that will be taking place in Indy on Wednesday, June 12th. Now, you obviously lead an organization that supports youth services across the Hoosier State. But I want to ask you, why is this initiative, this summit, this partnership between public and private entities so important for the Hoosier State?
Well, and I'm so glad you brought that up because the Lieutenant Governor is the one that really kicked off the roundtable and is the spirit behind the summit, which we're looking forward to and we're actively participating in, as you said, on June 12th. The important thing is that for us to provide the kind of support that kids need, it needs to be a network. We need to look at it as it's not just the mental health service. It's not just the after-school program. It's not just the schools, but it's actually all of us working together so that we can view this as we said, as a health issue that can, many of which can be prevented. So how can we better collaborate when we're talking about all of these different entities that care about the well-being of our kids, that have a part to play, that have connections or expertise or clinical experience? How can we all come together in a way that does provide that comprehensive network so that we can ensure that every young person has the opportunity to lead that fully healthy life, both physically and mentally?
Tammy Silverman is the president and CEO of Indiana Youth Institute. Tammy, as always, I enjoy spending time with you, learning how your organization supports all Hoosier youth. And I look forward to chatting with you next month.
Absolutely. It's always my pleasure. Thanks so much, Steve.
Indiana Youth Institute supports youth services through innovative trainings, critical data, and capacity-building resources, aiming every effort at increasing the well-being of all Hoosier children. For more information, visit www.iyi.org. And welcome back to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. According to a survey by Northwestern Mutual, 33% of Americans report that they do not feel financially secure, the highest amount reported in the survey's history. The survey also reports that over 50% of U.S. adults expect inflation to increase in 2024, with only 9% of U.S. households outpacing it. So how can you once again feel financially secure? Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer is with us now to explain why developing a financial plan can boost not only your financial security, but also your confidence. Greg, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me, Dee.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. Let's start by talking about Americans not feeling financially secure and how this number is the highest amount reported in the study's history. What is causing financial insecurity amongst Americans?
Sure, Dee. So the Northwestern Mutual Planning and Progress Study started in about 2009. And what it did is it began measuring financial security in 2012. Now, remember, at that point in time, the U.S. was in the midst of one of the longest bull markets in history. And many Americans got very comfortable with the economic state of the country and the stock market. And then the COVID-19 pandemic hit, you know, which we all know caused a lot of financial instability. So since the pandemic, we all know the market has been rather volatile. We hit bear market type territory. We've been flat. Now the market's high. And when you combine all of the instability with the current inflation, high interest rates, rising consumer debt, Americans are constantly having to pivot their financial strategies and sometimes life plans, you know, which could be exhausting.
Greg, I think a lot of listeners today are probably financially exhausted from the country's ever-changing economic landscape, as you just pointed to. We mentioned earlier that the study states that over 50% of U.S. adults expect inflation to increase in 2024, with only 9% of U.S. households outpacing it. The study also reports that Americans consider inflation to be the greatest obstacle to financial security, more so than factors like a lack of savings or even debt. Can you provide an explanation why inflation is weighing so heavy on people's minds right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's two very big things. One, it's a huge threat to the stock market because they're usually going to combat that with higher interest rates, which could slow down the market. And it's one of the biggest threats to your retirement savings. If the savings you have can't buy as much as it did previously, then, you know, you need to have more savings. So while some individuals may feel like they have a lack of savings, the ability to save money is somewhat under your control. So if you can save more money, earn more income, or you can cut back on spending to help boost your savings. And while we've seen inflation decrease somewhat since 2022, it's still very high relative to history. So over time, you know, inflation is a constant and it's a factor that is mostly out of our control. And that's why it weighs so heavy on people's minds.
You know, Greg, that makes sense. Now, speaking of boosting one's savings, what can listeners do to boost their feelings of financial security?
Well, I think the easiest thing, and we've spoke to this in the past, is just have a plan, right? Develop a financial plan, specifically a holistic financial plan. You know, when you have a financial plan in place and you follow it, your financial confidence increases, your stress surrounding finances may decrease, then oftentimes you can leave more of a legacy to your family and other beneficiaries.
You know, Greg, I've heard of holistic financial planning, but really don't know what that means. Can you kind of explain to our listening audience what the difference is between a traditional financial plan and a holistic financial plan?
Sure, Dee. So your traditional financial plan is going to generally focus on one financial goal, like saving for retirement. It will use your current financial situation to develop strategies and specific steps so you can reach that goal, and it's just about hitting those benchmarks. You know, whereas a holistic financial plan is going to look at the entire financial house and assesses everything, not just the retirement accounts, but other investments that you may have, what your mortgage is like, tax strategies that could be implemented to reduce and manage taxes moving forward, healthcare, how we're going to provide that, estate planning, how's our legacy going to be structured, insurance, to ensure that all these things are working together to identify financial gaps in your portfolio and ultimately to gain the maximum benefits of each of these components to obtain a short and long-term financial goal. So having a holistic plan often creates more wealth now and also in retirement and just confidence. We'd like to explain that it's a confidence for people to understand how things will be addressed moving forward.
Great. So could anyone benefit from a holistic financial plan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, you know, whether it's simple things like getting out of debt or managing a complex estate, when you have a plan in place, it will reduce stress because, again, you're just answering questions surrounding money and the financial plan moving forward, and it gives you actionable steps to help accomplish your goals.
And can you give us some examples of some of those actionable steps?
Of course. So everyone has a different financial situation. So when we discuss stress, money, our mind often jumps to thoughts of, you know, someone struggling with finances, especially if they just recently started their first job or paying rent for the first time, or maybe someone who lost their job. But there are many financial situations that can be stressful. For example, you could have someone or a couple that has saved a lot of money for their retirement, but once their RMDs are subjected to taxes, they could end up with substantially less money in their nest egg. You could have a successful business owner who could employ one of their children, and that child might have worked hard to help that parent build the business. So oftentimes in this scenario, the parent prefers to leave more of a legacy to that child rather than, you know, those who choose a different career path, which can cause friction and stress within the family. Third, you could have like someone nearing or recently in retirement and the market is volatile or we're in a bear market. And if this should occur, it then could impact your entire, you know, financial future and the rest of your retirement. So it's not just the financial struggles. It's about everything that evolves in your retirement plan and how you set up your distribution.
Greg, let's break this down into the three phases of life, right? So what should someone who is young include in their financial plan?
So I'm glad you talk about breaking it down, right, in these different phases. So each phase of life is going to be a little bit different. And because your financial plan really depends on you, your situation, you know, your financial journey, as well as the phase of your life, they're going to be different. But if you're young and developing a financial plan for the first time, it's always smart to include a budget, you know, plan to create an emergency fund. A debt, if you have it, how am I going to eliminate it? What's my plan for saving for retirement? You know, something, it could be simple. For the latter, it could be like just making sure we're taking advantage of a 401k that we have access, especially if the company offers a match. So as we previously discussed, the earlier you start saving for retirement, then compound interest can really work for you.
Now, once someone has developed a budget, and we've spoken about budgets before, they've developed a budget, they've saved for emergency expenses and started saving for a retirement, what is the next step?
And again, just to mention, everyone's situation is going to be different, of course, but once you have those in place, then you can start investing for other expenses, like if I have kids, how am I going to pay for their education? If I have concerns about extended care, what are some of the things I can do to address those, like life insurance or long-term care? It's my belief that everyone, you know, would benefit from an estate plan. You know, if nothing else, a simple will, medical power of attorney, a directive, right? Even if you don't think you have a complex estate, these are all things that are very relevant to end-of-life type scenarios. And as you age, it's wise to max out your retirement contributions. One way of doing this is saving a percentage of your paycheck rather than a dollar amount. So, you know, as you get raises, you're automatically going to be saving more for retirement. Also, if you're over 50, you can take advantage of catch-up provisions, contributions that you can add in excess of the normal ones that are allowed. And, you know, lastly, you should always assess your risk tolerance versus your investment goals. And that's because a proper allocation that balances your concerns of risk versus returns is a crucial step in the retirement planning so that you're comfortable with whatever volatility you're going to assume in that plan.
And Greg, what should someone consider when they're nearing retirement?
As you get closer, it's wise to reconsider, you know, what your current balance is and should I often restructure those, you know, replacing some of the high risk with more conservative, you know, we call positioning assets for purpose. And at this stage, you should really consider tax smart strategies. You know, one of the biggest threats is taxes. So if we can decrease taxable income in retirement, you're going to be able to keep more because they're one of the big, taxes are a big threat to the nest egg. And even if you're several years away from retirement, you should consider strategies that you can implement now to reduce your taxable income in retirement to give you different distribution options, like starting to put money into a Roth IRA or a 401k Roth. You know, contributing to Roth reduces your taxes in retirement because you pay the taxes today as you put it in, and you don't have to pay the taxes when you take it out. So you don't get the break today, but you'll get one in retirement, and those withdrawals from the account are tax-free and can help create more efficiencies in tax management.
Greg, you know, normally I end our conversations by asking you if you have any final words, but today I want to end with this. So earlier in our conversation, you stated that when you have a holistic financial plan, your financial confidence increases, your stress surrounding finances may decrease, and oftentimes you can leave more of a legacy to your family and other beneficiaries. To me, it sounds like developing a holistic financial plan is a no-brainer.
I couldn't agree more, Dee. It's, and, you know, it's wise to start, even if your plan is small, then evolve it. You know, evolve your plan with each phase of your life. And having a holistic plan absolutely does decrease the financial stress because you're being proactive rather than reactive to your financial environment. And it just gives you a lot of clarity and confidence.
Greg Hammer is the president and CEO of Hammer Financial Group in Schererville. Greg, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking, and we look forward to having you back with us next month.
Thanks so much for having me, Dee.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guests from the Indiana Youth Institute, President and CEO Tammy Silverman, Indiana's Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, and Northwest Indiana Financial Advisor Greg Hammer. And we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.